Welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Trump calls it the 12-day war, an illegal war on Iran started by Israel and supported by Washington. After the American attack on Iran nuclear assets, Iran retaliated with great sophistication. It would seem that was enough for Trump to call it quits. So, what was this war all about? Crosstalking Israel's war on Iran, I'm joined by my guest, Mohammad Mirandi in Tehran. He is a professor at the University of Tehran. In Isfahan, we have Sitera Sadiqi. She is an assistant professor at the Faculty of World Studies at the University of Tehran. And in Washington, we cross to Miko Peled. He is a peace activist and author of the book, The General's Son, The Journey of an Israeli in Palestine. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Professor Mirandi, if I can go to you first here. As we're speaking right now, I don't know how well, if at all, the so-called ceasefire is holding. We'll find out after the recording, I suppose. But what was this conflict all about? It's the 12-day war, 6-day war, 12-day war. This is what Trump's calling it. Maybe smarter minds will have a better name for it later. But what was this all about?
It was about undermining Iran. It was about regime change. It was about destroying the resistance and the axis of resistance. And in that respect, I think it was a complete failure. Despite the fact that there was a sudden illegal attack, unprovoked, a blitzkrieg, where the Israeli regime had successes during the first hours, obviously, as any blitzkrieg would. They murdered senior commanders in the armed forces, senior academics, scientists, and they murdered a lot of ordinary Iranians. They brought down a complete apartment. In the first night, they destroyed a complete apartment building with 65 to 70 people, killing over 20 children and over 20 women, just to murder two people. And then Western media called this a sophisticated operation. No, they attacked people's homes and they killed everyone else just to make sure that they could do, they could kill these people. So they did strike Iran air defense targets and radar installations, and that hampered Iran, and those commanders that were lost had to be replaced. And so it took time, but Iran did rally, and it began to strike back that very night against the Israeli regime, and it has been striking the Israeli regime ever since. And while the Israelis have been focusing on targeting civilians, last night they struck a hospital in Tehran, a long walking distance from where I am. But they struck homes north of Iran. They struck homes and elsewhere. They've been killing ordinary people. They've been killing ordinary people across the country. But ultimately, Netanyahu is the one who was seeking a ceasefire. He is the one who wanted.
Well, I want to get into that because I think also Donald Trump did, because I think he saw the trouble that he was making for himself domestically. We'll go right back to that in the second part of the program. Professor Sadiqi, basically the same question is that, you know, obviously in television punditry and politicians, they like to look at all of this as kind of like a football match. Who won, who lost, who scored points and all of that. But I have long contended if in the Iran being attacked by two nuclear states can be left standing, that is a very strong definition of winning at least this round of the conflict. Would you agree?
Exactly. That's why a lot of Iranians in Tehran and in the south and other cities have been celebrating Iran's response to the bombing of its nuclear facilities by the U.S. There are people who were just a few hours after Iran responded, took to the streets to celebrate Iran's what they feel victory, because as you said, two nuclear powers, two regimes that consider no limitation in killing and massacring and practicing terrorism, tried to bring Iran and the Islamic Republic to its knees without really gaining that. Also, I think it's important to remember that Israel the Israeli regime and the U.S. regime were wishfully thinking that this would open space for regime changers or those who might support regime change inside Iran and ultimately lead to the Balkanization of the country. But what we're seeing, even though we have lost a lot of people, and innocent children, women, as Professor Merendi also mentioned, nuclear scientists, university professors, doctors, and so on and so forth, we're still standing. And there's a lot more unity among people than we have ever seen. And this is, if this is not victory, I don't know what is.
Yeah, Miko, how is Israel any safer as a result of this 12-day war, as Donald Trump wants to call it?
Oh my God, is Israel safer? That's funny. It would be funny if it wasn't so tragic. You know, I want to talk about terminology for just a second. I think we need to remember that Iran is a country and Israel is the name of a regime that has taken over a country called Palestine. So just to put things a little bit more in perspective, Israel is the regime, Iran is the country, and Palestine is the country which, of course, the Zionist regime has been destroying and where it's been committing genocide for almost 100 years. Israel, and I don't think anybody is stupid enough to think that these attacks were going to bring about, you know, change the Iranian government somehow. What they did do, and I believe this was at least one, if not the main objective, is to be a smokescreen for the genocide and the mass killing in the Gaza camp and throughout Palestine. And we've seen this for decades, but in the past, they would point to Iran as some kind of an evil enemy, again, to hide, or, you know, as a smokescreen for what has been going on in Palestine, the genocide of the Palestinian people. This time they were crazy enough to actually launch missiles, but I don't believe that they for one second think that they are powerful enough to make a shift in the Iranian government.
Miko, you've obviously been watching this all of your life. What is the Trump factor here? Netanyahu has been trying to get American presidents to do this for over 30 years. Why did Trump say yes, in your opinion?
Well, Trump's been saying yes to a lot of things that no other American president said. I mean, in his previous term, he said yes to moving the American embassy and recognizing Jerusalem, which has never been recognized as part of the what's called the State of Israel, and recognize it as the capital of the State of Israel in violation of God knows how many international norms and laws, because Jerusalem is an independent entity. It doesn't belong to anyone right now. So he does all kinds of things. He's allowed all kinds of things in Netanyahu.
Why do you think he did that? I mean, I don't think Donald Trump's a Zionist. I don't think he believes in anything beyond himself.
No, but he's been given a lot of money by Zionists,
okay.
And he's got a lot of
okay.
Zionists around him, and so that's a good enough reason. I mean, you get $100 million from somebody, then you have to pay back, and he doesn't care, like you say. He doesn't care one way or the other. He doesn't care about Iran. He doesn't care about Palestine. He cares about his pocketbook and maybe a few members of his family. But he agreed to this because, you know, why not? He was given a lot of money to win this last election, and this is payback, and this is part of the payback. And, you know, who knows what goes on in his mind? I mean, it's impossible to tell what goes on in that man's mind.
Before we go to the break, Mohammed Mirandi in Tehran, I don't know if you saw Donald Trump's reaction to allegations that the ceasefire was breached. But, I mean, he had some pretty choice words, which I can't repeat here. Professor.
Yes, and I agree completely. Trump is not someone who we can really comprehend. He's all over the place. He's a mess. He has no principles either. And he says one thing now, something completely different hours later. He's a serial liar. So I agree. I think that it's impossible to know what goes on in his mind. But I do think that he did recognize that, and the political establishment in Washington, that this had to end because it was not going well.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Professor Siddiqui, if I could read to you, this is what Trump truthed or tweeted, whatever the terminology is. On the assumption that everything works as it should, which it will, I would like to congratulate both countries, Israel and Iran, on having the stamina, courage, and intelligence to end what should be called the 12-day war. Is this a score sheet? What is this all about? The day before he tweeted this or truthed it, he was calling for regime change.
Exactly. I mean, it's. I think it's very clear that he's very unpredictable, and in his mind, it's money, and probably, as some people have suggested, it's Epstein's files that are controlling him. He does not have any control over his own behavior and the words that he's putting out, and I don't think he understands what he's saying. So it's difficult to know what exactly he's trying to utter. But at this point, what he's trying to suggest is that he doesn't want to go along
with this statement, Professor, with this statement, he doesn't want to be responsible for what he does. He doesn't want to be responsible for a unilateral, unprovoked attack. That's why he wrote this message. Oh, I had nothing to do with it. That's why he's writing this. Agree?
Exactly. And I think part of it is probably because Iran responded to U.S. attack, and if Iran wanted to continue that, it would be a career catastrophe for Trump, because that's not what the American public really wanted. So you're right. I think he wants to claim that he's out of it and he has no role to play in this conflict, when in fact, without the U.S. support, the Zionist entity could not have done what it has done so far in Palestine, in Gaza, and in Iran.
But at the same time, he wants a Nobel Peace Prize for writing this kind of gibberish. All right, we have to go to a break. After that break, we'll continue our discussion on Israel's war on Iran. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaVelle. To remind you, we're discussing Israel's war on Iran. So let's go back to Miko in Washington. Miko, you know Israel, obviously. You know the United States well as well. So what was the domestic pressures on Trump and on Netanyahu? What we're being told, it's being related to publics all over the world, that for some reason, okay, I'm just going to say what they said, that the Iranians and the Israelis simultaneously called Donald Trump and basically begged him to force a ceasefire on both parties. Well, I don't believe that for a second, okay? I tend to think, I may be proven wrong, and everyone watching this program, a lot of people have been wrong about a lot of things over the last few months, so cut me a little bit of slack here. But my sense is that Trump panicked. And as a matter of fact, even the days and week before the American attack, he didn't seem like he had his heart in it, okay? Not his usual self, okay? And he started to realize after Iran's retaliation at the American base in Qatar that this is real. This is not a game. This is not a TV show. And I think he began to panic. He was losing his base. And I think somebody said, if you want to put a stop to this, you got to do it now. What do you think, Miko?
Well, there's also, well, that's one aspect. I mean, one aspect of it is the popularity contest. I mean, the Prime Minister Netanyahu is now at the peak of his popularity. He walks around the streets and people are just loving him and thinking he is a hero of heroes, you know? And so for him, this is a slam dunk. I think, though, I never thought that the United States and Israel would dare to attack Iran.
I agree.
Because of the consequences. And so they always threatened to attack, but they never did. And there was a reason for that. My thinking was that the reason they didn't attack is because it's insane. It's suicidal. Iran is not, Lebanon or Syria where you can attack. It's a whole other ballgame. And I think what Trump hopefully realized that attacking Iran is a bridge too far. They can't handle a war with Iran. Israel certainly can't handle a war with Iran. It will be the end of the entire Zionist project. And I think I'm hoping that Trump and the people around him realized that this is a bridge too far, that attacking Iran is insane. It's not going to end well. I don't believe Israel or the United States can take Iran and benefit from attacking it one way or the other. It'll be catastrophic for Israel and the United States. So hopefully that's what Trump or somebody around him figured out. I'm not sure the Israelis figured it out yet. So I think that's why they're still playing this very dangerous game. But this is, you know, there's no question. I think the history will show that this was a bridge too far, without any question.
Well, and if history is prologue, Professor Mirandi in Tehran, Israel doesn't honor ceasefires. It's a very long history of not honoring ceasefires. So, but you know, it's broadened it out a little bit, Professor. Is that the non-proliferation treaty has been destroyed? The IAEA has been completely compromised. Worthless. I mean, all the damage to the norms, the rules-based order, this is the legacy of this so-called war as well. Go ahead, Tehran.
Well, you know, actually, this works to the advantage of Iran, because for now on, Iran's relationship with the International Atomic Energy Agency is going to be very different. After the betrayals, after helping the Israeli regime, after refusing to condemn anything that the Americans or the Israelis done, I think in future Iran is going to behave differently. And I don't know exactly what is going to happen. There's talk of leaving the NPT. We'll have to see how that plays out. But in future, Iran's cooperation is going to be much less. And we have to remember that the science hasn't gone anywhere. Overwhelmingly, the scientists are there. And the equipment is there. Apparently, the Iranians evacuated all of these three facilities, the main one being, of course, Fordo. The other two are not that important, in comparatively speaking, and not that too expensive to replace. So a lot of the assets are there. And of course, the factories that produce the infrastructure for the Iranian nuclear program are spread out across the country. So it's not something that the Israeli regime can get rid of, but it is something that the Iranians can now use what has happened as leverage not to cooperate and to make more trouble for the West and for the United States and for the regime. Also, I would like to add that Iran has been united, as Dr. Sadeghi has pointed out. There's only one group in Iran that I think has shown some discontent, and there are those who've been saying Iran should have continued the war. But I think that what Iran did was probably the right thing, in that Netanyahu was begging for this to come to an end. And even though he is, as rightly pointed out, among many Zionists now very popular, but when the ceasefire ends, when there is a ceasefire, and we don't really have a ceasefire, it's a cessation of hostilities. Iran has said if they strike us, we'll hit them back very hard. But as the ceasefire goes forward, Netanyahu has made the request. He's exposed Israel to be vulnerable. It's no longer invincible. Iran every day has been pounding cities across that land, and there's nothing that they or the Americans could do about it. And so ultimately, I think when the dust settles, many in Israel are going to say, well, what have you achieved? You've wrecked the economy. You've made life more difficult for us. You haven't achieved anything. We're despised across the world. And I think that political divide in Israel is going to intensify again, and I think Iranians want to see how that plays out.
Professor Sadeghi, another interesting, Professor Mirandi and I know each other quite well, and we very often comment the similarity that Russia is experiencing from the collective West and what Iran. It's very similar in many ways. And I would posit a lot of people around the global South in particular see Russia taking on the entire collective West and still standing and actually prospering in many ways. Iran stood up to the collective West as well and is left standing. That's going to raise the profile of Iran all around the world as a principled stand.
That's exactly true. As you mentioned, Russia and some other countries in the global South, along with Iran, have resisted U.S. unilateral sanctions, aggression, support for terrorism, support for different terrorist groups who have assassinated the nationals of these countries. And they have flourished in many different areas. And this is something that is winning the praise of a lot of people around the world. I think Iran right now, especially after responding to Israeli aggression, after the world has been watching a genocide live streamed in Palestine for 2 years, are very happy and take pride in what Iran has been doing. So Iran at this point is enjoying growing popularity. You can see that in social media. You can see that the images that are coming from Tel Aviv and Haifa are giving hope to many people who have been oppressed and you know, targeted by the terrorist regimes in the U.S. as well as a Zionist entity. And this is a big win for the Iranian nation, but also the Iranian armed forces that have shown to the world that Israel is not invincible, that the U.S. And the imperialism can be defeated if we stand strong.
You know, Mika, even though I would say Iran has gotten the better of this gambit here, that's cold comfort after 625 days of genocide in Gaza. And you know, it's one of these painful things being in media is that I have to choose, I have to prioritize issues. And I had to let what's going on in Gaza move to the side. But now I'm going to go right back there, okay? And that's what the rest of the world needs to do, is go right back there. I hope that will be the case. Go ahead, Miko.
I agree with you. I think, again, the entire objective, in my opinion, of this assault on Iran is as to act as a smokescreen. The death camp, the Gaza death camp, the killing is going on methodically and in some of the worst, most cruel ways to kill people. Everything from, you know, letting people die of dehydration, starvation, infections, never mind the bombing and the killing, and so on. So, I mean, it's horrendous. And, you know, the invincibility or the perceived invincibility of the Israeli regime was brought up. You know, on October the 7th of 2023, a group of fighters from one of the poorest, most oppressed and hungriest regions in the world came out and demonstrated not only that the Israeli regime and its military apparatus and its intelligence apparatus are not invincible, they're nothing but a paper tiger. They managed to completely paralyze the apartheid state, and it's a paralysis they have not recovered from. I can't imagine what they were thinking when they were going to attack Iran, because, of course, there's no comparison between what the Palestinians in Gaza can do and what a country like Iran can do with its armed forces. So it's not invincible. It's not even, I don't think it's even capable. It's an incompetent system that relies on a lot of firepower, which they get very cheap, you know, they get from the United States. But I think we have to go back to talk about Palestine and the issue. And really, I mean, you know, the reason Iran is being punished and the reason, I mean, really the two countries that have been standing fiercely with the Palestinians are Iran and the Yemenis and the Yemeni forces. These are the two countries that have been standing loyal and brave, you know, in every possible way, and paying an incredibly, incredibly heavy price for that. That's why there's a war against Iran. That's why there's sanctions against Iran. That's why they're talking about regime change. It's about Palestine. It's because they dare to stand firmly with the Palestinian people and take a moral stance that is rare in today's world.
You know, Professor Moran, we're almost out of time, but the Qatar is very upset about how Iran retaliated against the U.S. But that should be a wake-up call for all of those oil-rich kingdoms that you better choose your friends carefully. Last 40 seconds. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Two things. One, we have to focus on Palestine and Gaza, as you said, and the genocide, the ongoing genocide. And two, these regimes have all been exposed as complicit. Qatar, CENTCOM in Qatar is used to protect Israel, and Qatar pays for it. It's the United States doesn't even pay for its expenses in Qatar. And so ultimately, by going down this road, whether it's Qatar or Turkey or Saudi Arabia or anyone else, they're hurting their own image. And as your guest rightly pointed out, Iran and the resistance are on the rise.
That was a fascinating discussion. I'm very, very grateful to all three of you. I hope to see you all again soon. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Washington and in Iran. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.